back together again. You and I kicking off a brand new week on a Monday, January 9th, 2023 edition of Connecticut Today. Monday's show featured moi, your host, and my thoughts on the start of recreational marijuana sales in the state. University of New Haven criminal justice lecturer Robert McDonald joined the show again to offer his analysis on the ongoing Idaho college murder investigation. And noted immigration attorney Renata Castro weighed in on the latest immigration law proposals coming from the Biden White House. So are you all excited about the marijuana sales starting, huh? Yeah. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So tomorrow morning at the medical marijuana distributors in the state, you can step up and buy a recreational marijuana. But get this. Registered medical marijuana patients, this is a story by Hugh McQuaid in the Connecticut News Junkie, no pun intended, registered medical marijuana patients in the state should stock up on cannabis ahead of the launch of the state's recreational adult use market on Tuesday. The long-awaited start of Connecticut's commercial cannabis market begins tomorrow morning, Tuesday, 10 a.m. So ding, 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 the... No, not at 4:20 p.m. At 10 a.m., thank you. Adults at least 21 years old can purchase up to a quarter of an ounce per transaction at 9 hybrid retailers around the state. Now, it says here, while those transaction limitations are meant to ensure an adequate supply of cannabis for both commercial and the medicinal markets, the DCP encouraged the state's roughly 50,000 medicinal marijuana patients to restock before the expected rush. Now, here's my, and I'm pulling back from this story here. This is me talking, not the news junkie. Well, here's what I don't get. If the state is worried about the medical marijuana patients not having enough marijuana that they need for their medicinal use. Again, there's 50,000 of them in the state. That's a lot of people. So then why are they allowing the recreational sales to begin? You see what I'm saying? I mean, are we so desperate about this that we are then putting the medicinal well-being of people who do get some advantage of medical marijuana, are we putting that at risk? You see what I'm saying? Commissioner Michelle Siegel, in a news release last week, said, while we hope there will be no disruption or inconvenience to patients, it's always best to be prepared. She concluded again, or continued, quote, patients who can make purchases ahead of time or have their medicine delivered are advised to do so. And although many of the hybrid retailers will provide separate checkout counters or cash registers for the medicinal marijuana patients, they may still experience increased traffic as well as crowds in and around the hybrid retailers for the opening days of the market. Well, then why are we opening tomorrow? See, this is typical of how this state does stuff, right? Remember a few months ago we had the controversy as to the General Assembly screwing up and not allocating enough money for the people who applied for that essential worker program? Well, sorry, we screwed up. We didn't think there'd be so many people, so you're not getting your extra $1,000. Yeah, but wait a minute. You said I was getting $1,000. Yeah, it's $200. Be happy with what you got. Cake. Go eat it. Connecticut lawmakers legalized recreational cannabis through a law passed in 2021, which also set in motion the commercial market beginning this week. Oh, it's in the bill. While state officials expect more cannabis businesses to come online in the coming year, the 9 retailers opening Tuesday are hybrid operations, which had previously been serving the medical market. So, again, why are we starting this when already? I mean, am I missing something here? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. It sounds like we're doing this, excuse my French. Why is it always French, by the way? Why is it never excuse my Greek or Italian? Seriously, excuse my French, but are we doing this half-assed again today? It's one of my father's old favorites. Ah, you're doing it half-assed, kid. Last month, Commissioner Siegel said the initial quarter ounce per transaction limit would be reviewed as more cannabis businesses came online. Siegel said the agency needed time to assess the demand for the product and how it stacked up against the supply capabilities of the state's cannabis producers. Okay, Madam Commissioner, who I've met a couple times, she's a very nice lady. But then why are we, what am I, missing something here? You tell me, 333-9422, 333-WICC. Is it fair? I'm asking this seriously. Is it in any way fair for the people who rely on a certain way or a certain ability to buy medicinal marijuana for whatever they have, their Parkinson's, their glaucoma, their constant pain, anxiety, OCD, psychiatric issue, whatever. Is it fair to say, well, you better hurry up and buy some, sir and ma'am, because the recreational people may gobble it all up, literally or figuratively? I don't know. I don't get this. I just don't. Horrible crime there at Moscow, Idaho. Some Idaho college students there stabbed apparently by the man that's been arrested for this, and he was a student not too far away school in Washington State. And now the trial not yet coming up, but the justice procedures proceeding there, and extradition and all that. He was arrested across the country. And, boy, I tell you, there was a good head fake here by law enforcement, calls to replace the people on the case when from the idiots in my business. Thank you so much. And then all it turns out they kind of had an early tag on who they were looking for. Joining us right now to talk about the investigation and these amazing details we are hearing about this is Robert McDonald. We've had him on before, a criminal justice lecturer at the University of New Haven, a former supervisory Secret Service agent who completed assignments with the Presidential, Vice Presidential, and Dignitary Protection Services. He's worked for the NBA as well. In a recent interview, he talked about the need for communication between students, family, and friends, especially when they're living off campus. A fascinating story being put together here. Bobby, hi, it's Paul again at WICC. How are you?
Hey, Paul, great. Nice to be back with you.
Well, thank you, sir, and thanks for the time, Bobby. We appreciate it. But, boy, how many people, especially the idiots in my business and all the talking heads, Bobby, were saying, you know, the Moscow police are in over their heads. Let the big boys handle this. They don't know what they're doing. When, Bobby, all the time, it certainly seemed like they had a hell of an investigation going on, and they found their guy more sooner than later.
Well, let me be honest with you. I was one of those people that was getting a little tired of the pace of the progress as well, and was a little bit vocal about talking about maybe blowing a little fresh air into the investigation. But boy, some really good old-fashioned police work here behind the scenes, in quiet, putting it together, and very impressed with the way this is moving.
So basically, a lot of people, like you said, including yourself, were getting a little frustrated because they really, Bobby, went out of their way not to say anything about this. They played dumb, didn't they?
They did, and I had made it known on a couple of other venues that, you know, perhaps they needed to get a little bit better handle on the way that messaging was going on. You know, one of the victims' fathers came out and was very critical of the PD, and that's never very good when you have the victim's family in the press making some critical statements. So, boy, they kept it airtight and really did a lot of pavement pounding behind the scenes to get this guy picked up and in the process of prosecution.
It certainly, Bobby, looks like maybe the golden thing that happened in this case early on, and of course they had all the forensics and the DNA from the scene. But although it was grainy and tough to see, that video of that white Hyundai Elantra, it looks to me, Bobby, maybe I'm wrong here, but that looks like that really got them going in this case.
I think that put a little wind in their sails. And look, we're very blessed these days with a lot of electronic tools to use that we didn't have years ago, piecing together cell phone pings on different cell towers, and video that we can piece together from different venues in and around the area. again, just some fantastic work by the cops there putting this together and to lead them to this PhD student from the school down the road.
Criminal justice lecturer, one of our go-to guys when it comes to all things police and investigative. Robert McDonald continues with us from the University of New Haven and the Henry Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Science. We're talking about this case that has captivated the country, and you hate when grisly things like this do that, but they take on kind of a life of their own. The murders of four college students at an off-campus locale a few months ago in the middle of November. Now the suspect, I guess we can call him, is in the process of extradition. Bobby, I guess also one thing this does illustrate, and I remember when I was a junior, I moved off campus at BU quite a ways away from the campus. Campus security, not always, but when you have dorms there and when you have gates and when you have police and security people and 24-hour guards, I guess it's kind of always going to be more safe than living, even though it's closer to the school. Off campus is off campus.
True. I mean, we want our students to go to university settings and be able to spread their wings a little bit, live life a little bit. That's why we all go through that experience. You know, most universities have a very robust security apparatus in place. The problem that we have a lot of times, Paul, is that when we try to, you know, go around the business of the security. In other words, kids leave the doors propped open or windows are left open or all sorts of things like that. We've got to be able to play within the rules, whether it's at schools, whether it's at hospitals, whether it's at buildings, you know, business buildings. Security is there for security, and sometimes it gets to be in the way, but we have those platforms in place for a specific reason.
One of the fascinating things, again, Bobby, about this case is this notion that the FBI or the Moscow police, they got officers to pull the alleged killer and his father over on the road, I think twice, on a cross-country trip. I guess there was air surveillance, too, and I guess they got the imagery of his hands that they wanted. And you look at that and you say, wow, they really were zeroing in on this guy, but keeping enough of a distance maybe to throw him off a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, we want our police officers, our students at our school to be curious, to be looking at creative ways to solve crimes and catch criminals. And, you know, we're looking for the truth. That's what we are looking for in the criminal justice discipline, getting to the truth as to what happened. Remember, a criminal investigation is a reconstruction of the past. So, you know, there were obviously some very creative and wonderful ideas here on how to think outside the box and how to maybe get some information from this guy without him really knowing that we're trying to get the information from him. So absolutely wonderful police work. And as I said, I was a little critical a couple of weeks ago. I'm a big fan of it right now.
And, you know, Bobby, this case, you know, we hear from producers and people who star on these crime shows saying, well, this doesn't happen in 40 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever. But from what I read, aided by this DNA matching that they can do without even getting a suspect sample of DNA because of all these heritage websites and heritage companies now, I guess they had their eyes on this guy within a couple of weeks or so, and that's amazing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think with his schooling and his background, you know, he obviously has a perceived leg up on law enforcement officials with his background and knowledge of the criminal justice system. But look, whether it's dumpster diving to get the trash or the pulling them over on the highway, you know, air surveillance, the cell phone pings, all of these things come together to narrow down, ultimately point the finger at this young man. And I think now we're really going to see this thing take off. I think the next step is going to be the continuation of trying to find that weapon, I think, and the continuation of the investigation to see if there's any other crimes he was involved in, not necessarily murders. But what else was he doing in and around that area for the last 6 or 8 months? You know, was he doing other nefarious activities that were leading him to be able to dabble in the discipline that he's studying in?
And Bobby, finally, to go back to that DNA, can you explain a little of this? So I guess because so many people now are into these ancestry websites and DNA typing from other types of things, I guess we can make an educated guess or get really close to suspects without actually having their DNA. Is that how it works?
Right. I mean, we basically were able to get some DNA off of that knife sheath that was found at the crime scene, and then DNA was taken off of some items within the family garbage, leading to probably his father's DNA. So that match is able to be made without necessarily getting the DNA from the suspect. We will probably now be able to get some DNA from him, which may in turn help the authorities out there potentially solve some other crimes that are now going to be investigated through his DNA and the DNA found involved in that crime.
Bobby McDonald, criminal justice lecturer, Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensics at the University of New Haven. Bobby, always good to hear from you. Take care. Happy New Year, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Same to you, Paul. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. There you go. So now it's so good. See, that's what they did. They never had his DNA to connect to the crime directly, but they got some of his father's DNA. Yes, you can dive in somebody's garbage that has been okayed by courts. And courts are saying, well, if you put your garbage outside, then you are, in effect, putting it in a public setting. You understand that some people other than your garbage man or garbage woman might be able to go through this. So they got some of the DNA from this guy's father. They found some DNA on a knife sheath. And there you go. By the way, did you read that one of the roommates came eye to eye with him? Oh, can you imagine? Yikes. Yeah, one of those issues that nobody seems to really want to fix because it'll anger people on the other side and in their base. We talk about immigration. The president in Mexico City today, he went to the border yesterday. And he's floating some new regulations at the border that are upsetting a lot of the people in his own party. To talk about this, a return visit from Renata Castro, founding member of the Castro Legal Group, a full-service immigration firm. She represents a wide range of clients, from accomplished athletes and extraordinary individuals to investors to victims of domestic violence, as well as those who want a new life in the U.S. You see her and hear her all over the country. She's located in Florida. Renata, hi. Happy New Year. It's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
It's great to be here. I guess New Year, old news.
Once again,
we're talking
about Yep.
The government's inability to address immigration reform. I guess 2023 will be a year of a lot of the same news, hopefully with a different outcome.
Now, Renata, what did, and I kind of glanced over it. I know the White House a few days ago leading up to this visit to the border, and now Mr. Biden is in Mexico meeting with the president there. Did I see there were two or three different things they want to do regarding quotas and people from Venezuela and other locales? Brief us on those. What have you seen there?
So the government is trying to address the humanitarian side, and that's always the conflict. How do you address the humanitarian side of a border policy that keeps true with what the United States stands for and how we have long benefited from immigration to the United States while keeping the sovereignty of the country and while keeping our country safe? So certain countries with you mentioned Venezuela being one of them, and Cuba, countries which are subjected to a quota that's not nearly enough to address the influx of migrants coming to the United States. But those are quotas for individuals coming to the United States in what they call a legal manner. It's surprising that the Biden administration, and listen, I have been a Biden fan, but this mm-hmm. was a foul to say that individuals who are coming to the border and trying to pursue asylum are coming here illegally. The United States law requires individuals seeking asylum protection to present themselves at a port of entry. So that's why they come to the border. What I haven't heard is anyone, either in the Democrats or on the Republican side, address the real deficiency of our current standing law, which requires individuals to risk their lives. If we want to address the issue of the border, we need better border enforcement, but we need a change in the law. People should be able to come to the United States with their asylum petitions already adjudicated by American consulates and embassies abroad. It's a no-brainer. If they can issue a visa, they can vet an asylum application. And yet, Biden copied the same inefficiency from the Trump administration by just throwing a bait to people who don't understand the legal mechanics behind what's happening at the border. And there I say it was very Victorian to see Governor Abbott hand a letter as he lays there in distress and talks to President Biden. Mm-hmm. But a letter is not going to solve the issue. Biden needs to have a meaningful, or when I say Biden, I mean the Biden administration,
sure,
needs to have a meaningful conversation with Congress and Senate based on knowledge of current law. And I think that that's not going to happen anytime soon.
If you'd like to learn more about our guest, her website is CastroLegalGroup.com, C-A-S-T-R-O LegalGroup.com, immigration attorney Renata Castro. Renata, is the problem here, is the problem from a legislative point, do you think that both sides here have to understand that to get any sort of real fix on this, there's got to be some give and take, and there may be people on both sides who are pleased about something, and there may be people on both sides that are not happy, because I don't see perfection possible here. Is that possible or not?
Perfection will never be attained unless Congressman George Santos, which has pulled the unimaginable, manages to listen. He's an immigrant. I'm sure he has his ways.
But where's he from? We don't know where he changes his story.
He is the James Bond of politics. He's a mix of James Bond and Forrest Gump.
He's a man of mystery. Yes,
well, that is without question. And I know that we laugh over something that's quite tragic, but that just goes to show the low quality of the individuals who represent our interests in Congress and Senate. We have a very dysfunctional Congress and Senate that it's unreasonable to expect politicians to know about every single issue they vote on in depth. And that's why they invite counselors, professionals. They invite people who know about the law. But for as long as both sides realize that immigration is one of those things that's in vogue to have an opinion either for or against, but not really resolve the issue, and to do headline grabbing, sending migrants to somebody's house, or handling a letter at the border. Those are the things that I hope the American voter will understand. Well, wait a minute. Why is Canada expanding their migrant program in the hopes that they will solve the major labor shortages that they have that are impacting, the cost of their lives? Why is it that the United States can't get its act together? There's a reason. Congress and Senate, they don't want to. Why? Because it's easy to be in the news and to get headline grabbing and to get votes. That's the name of the game.
Well, sure, Renata, because both sides, they have that base. And what happens in the primary process, right? The base donates. Do you think maybe, and I've always thought this, and I'm kind of a border hawk a little bit, I thought if the Democrats were smart, they would call the Republicans bluff, right, and say, okay, you want more tough border security? We will give you, we'll close the gaps here, and we'll build a higher wall here. But you've got to, like you said earlier, Renata, come forward with your idea. We'll give you your security, okay, but tell us how to fix the asylum system. What are your ideas to fix the asylum courts and the process of this system? Because somebody's got to budge here.
I think that we need to stop looking for theorists and pursuing realists in executing any kind of legislative plan that will have some kind of resolve to what has been a problem for quite a while. Border security has been a problem for the past 30 or 40 years.
Oh, yes,
Why is it more evident? It is more evident because more people are getting caught. Mm. It's not because more people are crossing. We have seen through my practice, and I practice nationwide, so I have contact with quite a lot of people. Individuals who are coming to the United States in the 80s were entering the United States through the border four or five times.
Mm.
The border was not safe then. We just didn't know about it. So now that we know better, how do we do better? And that's the question that Congress and Senate needs to ask professionals, lawyers, individuals who understand the law in its application, and stop listening to, you know, PR campaigns, PR stunts that are designed to get media time and not to resolve the real issue at hand.
And to your point, Renata, we didn't see, and it's not only with the border, it's with so many other issues in our lives. Today, we can pick up our phone or look on our tablet, and we're connected to the world. And if there's video of people clogging the border at Nogales or at El Paso or whatever, we can see that. 40 years ago, we never saw that. I never remember, Renata, the evening newscast, and I used to watch them religiously on all three networks at the time. I never saw a border story that I can remember. Never.
It wasn't. The reason why you didn't see it is because, first, no one wanted to go and stand at the border. It's not a fun place to be, first of all. Documenting 24 hours. There wasn't such a political grab at immigration as there is now. 20, 30 years ago, if you said you were an immigrant and you were in the United States, you were seen as a hustler in a good way, go-getter. Now people say, oh, you're an immigrant. You're coming here to be on food stamps. No one can get food stamps if they're here without status. Immigrants come here and they work hard, but no one talks about who hires them. Americans hire them.
Yeah.
Why? Because they want access to cheap labor. And nowadays, I won't even say cheap labor. They want access to reliable labor.
Yeah.
Every single business owner I talk to, and I have a lot of clients in the Connecticut region, they talk about how hard it is to find people who are reliable, who are dependable, and who want to work. Everyone wants to be a TikToker. An economy is not made of TikTokers. An economy is made of carpenters and business people and boring businesses. That is why the United States is such an economic force. It is so sad that we are favoring entertainment over legislation. This will cost the United States greatly in the future. And it's not only because of the border. It's because we're going to lose our edge. There's China, there's Canada, there are other countries that are breathing down our necks, and they want what we are pushing away, which is the hustle of migrants that have made this country the great institution that it is today.
The website CastroLegalGroup.com. Good to hear from Renata Castro. She's an authority on immigration law. So if you're interested in maybe retaining her services or getting some advice from her, once again, CastroLegalGroup.com. Renata, thank you. Happy New Year, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. All right. There you go, folks. There you go. Listen, I think Bernard and I agree on something. You got to do something. Something has to be done here. Something has to be done. And if I were the Democrats, and again, they're wanting not to do this because it would infuriate their base. And look at what Bernard said, and you don't believe her if you want to. Look at it. These new limits or migratory limits put out there by the Biden White House. I mean, the left is going nuts over this. But if I'm the White House and I'm Democrats, I say, okay, we'll plug the holes in the border. We'll put up some new fencing or whatever, or make it high, or, I don't know, add razor wire, whatever. I'm not an expert on this. But then what are you Republicans going to do to fix the rest of the system? See, I'm a big believer in, if you take away a talking point from somebody, whether you're on the left or right, you kind of disarm them. And part of winning a battle is disarming them, right? And pardon me, on the Republican side, what the Republicans should say is to the Democrats is, well, okay, and I'm guess this constantly goes on, but they should say, well, okay, we will hike these limits. We will give you a better process to get migrants here that are law-abiding but are escaping, you know, any sort of prosecution here. But what are you going to do about the hard nuts and bolts border security? Fascinating.